I'm Claire Liu, and I'm the CEO of Know Your Company, and today I am incredibly excited because I have a very special guest and dear friend with me today. I have Halima Nash, who is the executive director of iMentor Chicago, and Halima is someone who I look up to. I remember meeting her for the first time a few years ago and being floored by what you said, how you impress people in the room. And since then, I've been a big supporter of iMentor. So they, here in Chicago, what they do is help support high school student success for college and have since tripled their growth from serving 200 students in year one to over 1,000 now. So Halima is, enormously impressive. I could honestly talk about her for hours. Instead, you should go to halimanash.com, read about her, watch her speak. She just recently did a TED Talk. She's published a book. But Halima, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me to be a part of this conversation. I think this is really cool.
Of course. I mean, you literally were one of the first people I thought about when I started doing this series and thought about this question I wanted to ask leaders. And so as a leader, especially in the nonprofit world, and I know you've started your own consultancy in the past, you've worked with Nike, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, you've been CEO of a foundation, and now you're the executive director for a nonprofit. So a lot of varied leadership experience, but all in the nonprofit sector. Got this one question for you, which is, if there was one thing you wish you would have learned earlier as a leader, what would that be?
I would say that there is power in leading authentically, in authentic leadership and everything that that means. I think that in the beginning of my leadership journey, there was so much that was about trying to figure out how to say the right things and how to present in the right way, and this definition of what it meant to be professional. And, you know, like then in the nonprofit space, you know, how do you ensure that you're crafting the right message and you're serving as a brand ambassador for your organization? But often you can lose yourself in that. And there's so much power in leadership if you take what is core to your beliefs, not just the core values of a business, not just the core values of a nonprofit, but what are your core values? What makes you tick? What are the things that make you come alive? What do you sort of give your life to? And how do you ensure that when you walk into a fundraising pitch, when you walk into a presentation, that you are walking in everything that makes you uniquely you? And it is worth all of the time in the world to understand who you are before you understand how to communicate a brand or how to market a product.
Right. So that's fascinating because I think what happens to a lot of leaders, myself included, is you hear this phrase a lot, which is fake it till you make it, right? So this idea that you might not know what your product is, or you might not feel 100% confident going into that fundraising pitch, but you know, just sort of fake it or just sort of project what you would want or project what you think the organization's values or whatever need. How do you feel about that then? I mean, is there a way when you're not feeling, you know, your best or when you're feeling imposter syndrome, how do you lead authentically in that situation?
Yeah, you know, see, you can't because it's not sustainable, right? You know, like there is a period that you can do that you can be an actor in a play on a stage, communicating and selling something, right? Which most salespeople would say. But I think that imposter syndrome and effective, authentic leadership cannot exist in the same space. So imposter syndrome will like give you an opportunity maybe to get in the door, but authentic leadership is what will keep you there. Right. And what actually breaks the doors down and ensures that you can connect with people across socioeconomic boundaries, across, you know, any kind of lines that we create, all of the boxes that we create for ourselves. And I think that like imposter syndrome actually puts you in a box.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
It puts you in a space where you kind of have to operate in that way. And, you know, it's really intimidating to have to play a part all of the time. You know, there will reach a point where you will no longer love what you do. There will reach a point where you become disenchanted with what you're doing if you operate in a space where you feel like you're an imposter or you're acting as an imposter, right? So leading authentically, and you also have to define what that means for you. right? Because we now, you know, authentic is not just about how you wear your hair and how you dress at work.
Yes.
Like, it's more about just what's core to who you are. And I had to learn what authentic leadership actually meant for me. It meant thinking about how I enter the boardroom as a person that comes from a low-income neighborhood.
Yes.
And how being from a low-income neighborhood taught me a level of hustle and taught me connectivity and taught me intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
You learn all of those things when you have to figure out how to turn a dollar into 10,
yes,
right? You know, or how you have to figure out how to survive on, you know, the bare minimum. So there was a period of time where I figured out I needed to shed those things. I needed to shed how I talked. I needed to shed sort of a lot of those things that were associated with being a low-income minority woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like trying to enter into these spaces where I felt like I wasn't good enough.
Hmm.
Enter yep. into these spaces and be successful in these spaces where I questioned myself all the time.
Right.
And then once I reached the point where I said, well, you know what? There were things that I learned as a low-income student, you know, navigating being a first-generation college graduate. There were things that I learned going to a historically Black college, being
yes.
at Howard University, where sometimes we match ourselves against other universities, where
yes.
you're told maybe you don't have as many resources or maybe you're not as competitive. But I realized that I was more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I was more prepared. And, you know, there's this fantastic speech that Michelle Obama gave in South Carolina, where she talked about all of the ways that, you know, she was taught growing up that she mm-hmm. was enough
mm-hmm.
and that she had what it took. And then she got into schools where people would say, you know, you're a girl from the South Side of Chicago. You're a Black girl from the South Side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means? That means that you're not likely going to get into these universities.
Right.
And you're likely not going to be able to navigate these systems. And, you know, at the end of the speech, she said, you know, I realized that I was more ready than I could have ever imagined.
More
I was
ready. More ready than you could have ever
yeah.
imagined.
And that's what authentic
yes.
leadership is,
yes.
like tapping into who you are and aligning it with excellence and success and all of those things that you want to achieve.
Absolutely. Well, I know, so after you went to Howard, you spent some time at Duke,
mm-hmm.
which is a very different scenario. And I can only imagine, yeah, this feeling of, do I need to maybe, yeah, act a different way? Do
mm-hmm.
I need to put off what I think people want from me as a leader? I mean, was there a moment or a person or something that happened to you where you saw that shift in yourself of, oh, wow, I need to lead authentically if I'm going to really feel like myself and do my best work?
I would say it wasn't at Duke University.
Or maybe it wasn't at Duke. I was going to say,
yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's not at Duke. Maybe it was after, maybe it was before. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it was interesting. It was these two very different dynamics, like
mm-hmm.
going to Howard University in Washington, D.C., and then going to Duke in Durham, North Carolina, were two totally different animals. And so I went from this environment that really nurtured me
mm-hmm.
and really like pushed me into the next level and gave me all the resources that I needed. And then Duke is the environment where it's very cutthroat. It's
mm-hmm.
you figure out how to do this on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You figure out how to be the best of the best. Like, it's a very different environment. It wasn't as communal for me. And so operating in those two different spaces and having to navigate success,
yes.
I was able to do it in both spaces, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized that at Duke University,
mm-hmm.
I was faced a little more with how different I was.
Mm-hmm.
I was different in terms of, you know, kind of my socioeconomic background, right? There's a lot of international students, right? Because you have, you know, African-American people, you have people that come from all over the world. You know, one of my really great friends grew up in Australia
mm-hmm.
and, you know, she spoke fluent Chinese, right?
yeah.
You know, and I'm at Howard where I'm like, you know, I barely have functional Spanish from what I learned, you know, growing up. But, you know, there was so much diversity. And then when I got to Duke, it was a different kind of diversity,
mm-hmm.
right? And diversity sort of meant you were the only woman in a space, right? Or you were the only African-American in a space. So that might have meant diversity for other people, but it didn't necessarily mean diversity for you.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you elevate your voice
mm-hmm.
as a voice that is important in that
mm-hmm.
space, right? How do you ensure that you are crafting the kind of communication that reaches people that are very, very different from you?
Yep.
And that's really what I learned at Duke University was when I came to Chicago, when I really was faced with what does it mean to operate in authentic leadership?
Okay.
And I would say, interestingly enough, I wish I could say it was 10 years ago. I wish I could say that it was five. It was a year ago that I really recognized.
That's authentic to me.
Like that.
I'm like, you're being real. So that's, thank you for leveling with us.
Right. Yeah.
It makes me feel a whole lot better.
Yeah. Like,
honestly.
And, you know, we use this phrase in Compton, you know, you ain't got to lie to kick it. Right. You know, and so I'm not going to lie to kick it. Like on in this interview, you know, I was a part of a fellowship called the Surge Fellowship. And it's about elevating African-American and Latino leaders in education and preparing them for a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's kind of a dual leadership development opportunity. It's getting you to understand what it takes for that seat at the table. But it's also you realizing that that seat at the table needs you, but it needs authentically you. It doesn't need the imposter. It needs what you bring to the table in order for us to really talk about education reform in the right way. And so I spent 10 months, you know, like listening to speakers and listening to people who spent 20 years in leadership, not leading authentically and having their aha moment.
Right.
And listening to people like, you know, who talked about the dangers of not leading authentically and talked about, you know, how we are all in these education spaces where we're serving Black and Brown kids. But what's important in serving those kids in the right way is having people that have that shared experience, that understand the importance of excellence and understand the importance of getting to that podium or sitting at that boardroom table and making decisions for those populations in a way that's relatable and one that sort of represents who you are,
right?
Who you are authentically. And that was my aha moment where I just was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I have been thinking that you have to speak the way the dominant culture speaks.
Mm.
That, you know, if you want in a speech, if I'm talking to kids in high school, there's a way that I engage them.
Yeah.
And it's very different than how I engage my board.
Sure.
And yeah, I get that. But there is a common language that exists in both of those spaces.
Yes.
And that's the language of Halima.
Yes.
And I have to be very comfortable in that language.
Sure.
Because like that's where I can kill. That's when I go in and I could fundraise. That's when I go in and I could lead a team and I could develop culture. Because it's with all of the things that make me uniquely me.
Right. It's not fake.
It's not fake.
And you're not pretending to be someone else.
I'm not.
So I think what you are describing is a very little discussed topic for a ton of leaders. So many leaders don't like to talk about the fact that at some point in their careers or even maybe currently, they struggle with figuring out how to be more like themselves instead of trying to be like everyone else. I think even as companies, we look at all of our competitors and think, oh my gosh, I gotta try to be like, you know, this person in the market. I gotta be like this CEO, or I saw this person on the, you know, 40 under 40. This is what I have to be. I have a really good friend of mine who's a CEO here in Chicago, and he's young. You know, he's not even 30 yet, and he runs a venture-backed 40-person company. And I remember he told me, Claire, you know, we went through a really, really rough time in the company. I had to lay off a bunch of people. We almost ran out of cash. I thought I was going to have to shut the company down. And he said, and it was during that time where what he would do, because he was so desperate to try to feel like he mattered, to try to be this picture of what he thought a leader was supposed to be, he was wearing suits all the time, right? He was talking in a way where he tried to make himself seem older, more important, and more formal. And that didn't help the business. That's the interesting thing. They didn't make more sales. They didn't turn anything around. And it was the minute that he decided to relax, be himself, and wear whatever he wanted, and talk to people normally, that everything turned around. And it's funny, you know, obviously there was some work involved there. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm not going to wear a suit, and now the business is doing better, right? Like, there's something there. But I'll never forget that. Because I think for anyone, whether, you know, you're a woman, person of color, whether, I mean, my friend, he's, you know, white dude, CEO, like, it doesn't really matter. We all struggle with, I think, this internal battle of figuring out, like, who are we? And as a leader, let's make sure I'm staying true to that instead of just trying to be someone else.
And I would call out, based on that comment, that it's not easy.
Yeah.
And there's not a timeline to it.
Right.
You know, it's not, if you are a CEO for this many years, right,
yes,
you will be able to shed the layers and finally reach authentic leadership. Or if you read this book, or if you,
it's always a book,
right? There's always a book, right?
Yeah.
But I think that it's putting a level of priority on authentic leadership.
I love that.
You know, ensuring that when you think about what it means for you to be successful as a CEO or an executive director or whatever leader that you are, however you're leading in your company or in your community, it's saying that a priority for professional development for me is to be authentically me.
Wow.
Then unpacking what that actually means.
Right. I'm taking that with me. I'm serious. I'm going to write that down literally right after this interview because as with anything, you know, the things that you make a priority, that's what actually becomes real.
So. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm big on prioritizing,
yes.
right? You know, there are a million things going on working in nonprofit. You know, I'm leading the team. I'm the external ambassador for the organization. I'm fundraising. I'm learning and making sure that I'm always up to date on what's happening. But, you know, for me, I'm always ensuring because it's also a practice. It's not just a goal and you know, something that
practice.
You reach. It's not really a mountaintop. Like authentic leadership is a practice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to consistently, you know, kind of exercise that muscle, right? You know, so how much time am I spending, whether it's a 5-minute meditation in the middle of the day, whether it's ensuring that I'm listening to a certain podcast that's about self-improvement and about, you know, getting to the core of who you are. That has to happen on a weekly basis because you'll get away from it.
Yeah,
you know,
you're
and then
so
you look
right.
up and you'll be like, oh, you know, I was just here 2 years ago after all that hard work.
Oh, you're so right. Yeah. That's so refreshing being here, Halima. Thank you so much for sharing that wisdom with us, for being here today. And I think all of us are a little more inspired to lead authentically. Thanks.
Thank you, Claire.